Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of brainhackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of brainhackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, brain hackers out there. This is Dave Farrow with another Brains Behind It. I have Brenda Reynolds here. She is an expert on dealing with uncertain times. Her book, To Be Determined, is Leading with Clarity and Confidence in Uncertain Times. And I don't mean her title is To Be Determined. That's actually her title. So kind of catchy, kind of interesting. Hey, Brenda, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
All right. So really quick, what can people glean from your topic? What's the most important tip or strategy that they should be using right now in uncertain times?
Well, it's simpler than we make it. We can only control what we can control. So see the big picture, but then think small. So I talk about this concept called transition fog. It's when all the uncertainty starts to blur our path forward. And just like driving in the fog, you take it one stretch at a time. So really focusing on what's the next thing I can do and I can control.
So it sounds like you're saying that we're our own worst enemy. You know, we're overthinking things. We try to strategize every little detail. I mean, isn't planning ahead important as well? Or are you just talking, this is the crisis management approach in clearer skies, then you plan ahead. But when skies are murky, then be more cautious.
Yeah, sometimes you can think ahead and act more locally, you know, more immediately. There are other times in our life where we just can't see. We cannot see the path in front of us at all. And so all you can do is say, what's that next right thing that I can do?
So when you talk about this uncertain time, so you're hired by companies, corporations to do a really high level training, coaching, consulting and everything. Tell us some of the companies that have hired you to give people an idea of why they should listen to you.
Let's see, I've worked in some cool places. I worked with AOL in their heyday. Mm-hmm. I've worked for Sherwin-Williams, Moen, QVC, gotten into some really cool places as well as nonprofits and entrepreneurial organizations and startups.
QVC is an interesting one too. Like they went through a period of time where they're very uncertain because the internet was crushing their margins, and they did a merger with HSN, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. But you'd say that these principles, they help anybody in uncertain times. Let's say like you're an individual and you're not sure if you're going to keep your job or something else is going to move forward, or if you're stagnating at work, something like that.
Yeah, it can be positive or not so positive things. It can be losing a job. It can be starting a new job. It can be launching your kid to college and dealing with an empty nest.
All right. So I have a really important question I think everyone's asking is, what do certain times look like? Because it seems like every time is an uncertain time these days. What exactly is a certain time? I've never had a time in my life where I could really predict what was going to happen. I think there's a lot of people who, you know, they went to college, and then when they got out of college, kind of the moving truck of the real world kind of hit them broadside, and they realized that things weren't certain and they had to kind of roll up their sleeves and work. Is this just like how to deal with life and the changes in life, or is this specific?
You are hitting on an exact perfect point, because that's why I wrote the book.
Thank you.
Yeah, I tried. I mean, it's why I wrote the book. It's the muscle we need to build, right? Is how to get good with uncertainty. One uncertainty after the next, after the next, after the next. And where we have certainty, it's fleeting. And then we're on to the next thing.
Well, the only constant is change, as they say. And
right.
It reminds me of my favorite Buddhist parable where, long story short, essentially, this woman who's lost a child goes to the Buddha and say, hey, you're magic, you know, save my child's life, bring him back to life. And instead of saying, you know, I'm just an enlightened individual, I'm not a demigod, he decides to be a little crafty, and he says, you know what, I have the power to do this, but I'm going to need one thing. I'm going to need a mustard seed from a house that has not recently tasted death. right? So she's like, oh, I can find that, because she believes her experience is the only experience. You know, everyone else is doing fine, but I just lost my child, right? So she goes from house to house to house and hears that, you know, that an aunt recently died, or a child recently died, or a parent or something. And every single house has had their own tragedy. And the lesson there is that, you know, life is struggle, life is difficult, life is constant change, but it's that way for all of us. You're not special, you're not unique. And then she goes back to the Buddha and says, you know, thank you very much for making me go on that journey, because I've met so many people who've experienced the same thing, and it's given me peace of mind, and that was the point all along.
Well, whatever club you're in, whatever uncertainty club you're in, right? So I went through divorce, and I still remember one of my clients calling me into her office and saying, have a seat, what's going on? I can tell something's up.
And you said your business training and corporate training and all that like, you know, consulting stuff actually helped you in your divorce.
It helped me very much in it. You know, so this woman calls me in her office and says, what's going on? And when I start telling her, I'm a little embarrassed to talk about what's going on in my life. I'm the consultant. I'm supposed to have answers. I'm supposed to help people with their uncertainties. And there I was in my own. And she said, you are now a member of the club. You will always be, you know, a member of. And we help each other and we support each other. So in 2008, when the economy decided to take a nosedive, so did my life. I think a lot of people can relate to that. For me, it was the divorce, unexpectedly. Single mom, two little boys. And what I started to realize, Dave, is I was using the concepts and principles that I would use to help my clients in applying it to my own life like never before. Mm-hmm. And that really is what motivated me to say, hey, I've got this book in me, and it's really about, it's really tailored for leaders, but the truth is my mom read it and has gotten a lot of good information out of it, because the same concepts we need to apply in our life.
All right. So I'm all for self-help. That's actually the goal behind Brain Hackers, you know, is I started off thinking that, you know, the brain can be hacked and we can think different thoughts, and that creates different results in our life. And, and you know, my life's a great example of that. And a lot of others, you know, swear by it. And those who don't swear by it, they probably haven't tried it. So
they're not listening
or they're not ready to, they're not ready to improve themselves. They're still kind of in a bitter place, blaming others and all that. Not that there aren't things that are other people's faults, but the best strategy in life is to just pull up your sleeves and dive in no matter what the challenge. So I want to get a couple of tips from you about specific situations. So you mentioned divorce. Yeah. Let's say a man or a woman is involved in a divorce and they're crushed emotionally. What is your best tip for that they should do right now to either feel better or be better off or improve their life?
Couple of things. One is, don't compare what's going on in your life to what you think is going on in someone else's life. It's really easy to fall into that trap of making comparisons, because like the
Buddhist example, yeah.
You know, you think it's only you. The truth is it isn't. And maybe no one's going through exactly what you are, but there are a lot of people in that boat. And so put on your low beams. Don't start thinking about, oh my gosh, what's my future going to look like? Because every part of your life is changing. But just say, what do I need to take care of today? And keep it there.
You know, actually, this is really good business advice as well, anytime dealing with a crisis, because I've often said to people that the two things that advice I give to people who are just starting out in businesses, I've had several successful businesses in like five different industries. So people come up to me and I don't know everything, but I know a few things and the advice seems to work for them. So like one of the things I always say is that this is just kind of an instinct for me, is I keep my eye on two numbers. One's my cash flow and one's my future opportunity. So my money today and my money down the road, and right. I have to have both, because I've swapped I've changed where I get my money, because there was one thing that was going to dry up, another opportunity was growing, and I had to straddle that and jump to the next thing. But I have to pay the bills. You got to make payroll. You got to do every single day. So keeping on top of that. So when you're in the time of that crisis, you stop thinking about the future for just a bit, and you're just like, let's just make sure we get payroll done. Let's get these bills done, and let's, you know, get through this crisis. But always keep an eye on maybe that future, like what is shaping, what is forming. And that's how I got through the 2008. You know,
isn't that the entrepreneurial journey, Dave? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's the entrepreneurial journey. You're working on something, it's going well, but while you're working on that, You know, so for, I'll take myself for an example.
Yeah, you're aspirational to something else. Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm in a heavy client mode, I'm not worrying. I'm not doing a whole lot of quote business development and working on other things, but come through that. And then you start saying, oh, now I can start putting my attention on the speaking opportunities I'm taking care of. And in fact, this week I will sit down and I will look at what is my big picture strategy and all of the aspects of my work in the world. And then I'll pull in and say, okay, in each of those buckets, what are the few things I need to move forward?
Yeah.
And then cumulatively, it has a big effect down the road.
And also I would have to say, sometimes you have to ignore some things. Some people that are like, there's some, maybe a bill collector is making a lot of noise, but you've got to ignore them. You got to focus on where's the money coming from and making that paycheck and everything or you know, something. You've got to ignore something because you can't do all of it. So you have to prioritize and do what you can do and not let it affect you, because you will get out of that downside. Every down has a big up as well. You know, the great gurus of the world kind of focus on what you're talking about as well. That idea of like, don't be jealous. You know, jealous people do not end up very successful in life, period. Actually, this kind of goes back to like you talked about the entrepreneur's journey. This goes back to kind of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey type thing, where you know, if you compare yourself to someone else has had different experiences, started off in a different place. You know, it's apples and oranges at best. Even the closest comparison is still apples and oranges. You know, you don't know what I've suffered through. I don't know what you've suffered through, et cetera. And let me tell you, if we were going to have a pity party, you know, we could go down forever. Right. But that would not solve anything. But you compared to yourself is a fair fight. You know, you're comparing yourself, your present self, to your future self. And the goal is to be better. And so the real hero's journey is a battle against the self. And the transcendent hero's journey is to transcend that and accomplish something more, whether it's to get healthier, to get more fit, to live longer, to be happier, to overcome a problem, to have a stronger relationship, or to overcome, you know, a divorce and relationship turmoil or you know, whatever it is. You compare yourself to your past self and you're trying to be a better person. And that's the dragon that you're slaying. And there's no part in that where it benefits you at all to compare yourself to others.
So even when we're comparing to ourselves, we have to be careful we don't get too far out in front of ourselves, because here's what I mean by that. You know, you start making headway or you start doing something that's new and different for you, but you're still focused on how much further you have to go. And if you get too focused on the gap, you're never satisfied with where you are. You never feel good about what you are.
Yeah, you're comparing yourself to your hypothetical self.
Yeah, you know? Blow it out self, which, you know, I have made a habit at the end of every day, literally, to just write down or note 5 things that I accomplished that day that I feel really good about, big or small. Because I call it my damn I'm good strategy. Because it's so easy for us to focus on how much further we have to go or what we didn't get done or how badly we ate that day or whatever. But instead to just say, well, wait a minute, what are the 5 big things I moved forward in some way today? And then at the end of it, you kind of do end up saying, damn, I'm pretty good. No, this was a good day. This was all right. I got some stuff done.
Absolutely. Yeah. Guard the pillars of your mind. You know, the negative self-talk can come back to haunt you. Okay. So, and the second thing I wanted to ask you about is really, how do you market this? So kind of like, go take me behind the scenes a little bit. You know, you have this topic, you have this skill set. Like me, you know, my topic, my skill set of memory helped me tremendously in my personal life. I'm not just talking, you know, remembering an anniversary or something so someone's not upset, but just, you know, being able to learn fast, being able to focus when I need to, being able to get my work done and be productive, give me more social life. Like, it all kind of ties together. I'm not a believer in the myth that if somebody is great at work, they have a horrible home life or vice versa. Usually it's the other way around. Somebody who has a good work life, you know, they've developed the skills to work with people, to make compromises, to communicate. All these things are great in relationships. So assuming all these things, take me behind the scenes and how you run this like a business. How do you get these paying gigs? How do you get these consultancies, and how do you sell your book?
Well, you may not like this answer. It shows up. I mean, honestly, I have been doing this consulting work for well over 20 years, and the work shows up. I've gotten into all of those really awesome places by word of mouth referral. You know, I really truly believe that you go in and do good work and you produce results and you're trustworthy and you really truly care. I mean, the highest compliment a client ever gave me, he looked at me in real surprise and said, "Here's the thing about you. You actually truly care about your clients."
Yeah, it really shows up, doesn't it? I've had the same philosophy in my business here. And now we've reached the point where the majority of our business comes from like referrals of some sort.
Yeah.
But we didn't start there. So what would you say to somebody who starts out, you know, they want to get a contract with a major corporation, and how do you get through that door?
I did it through networking. I put a note out when I started years ago, literally, this would not be in a Wharton School of Business textbook. But I, at the time, my ex-husband was a Wharton graduate, and he said, "What's your marketing plan?" And I said, "My marketing plan is I'm going to write an email to everybody I know and tell them I've just hung my shingle out and see what happens." And he said, "Yeah, tell me how that goes at the end of the year."
Well, that's funny because
it worked.
Well, that actually is modern marketing. So talk about the Wharton School of Business or any school of business. The irony and the interesting thing is that, and this is not my opinion. I'm just kind of, well, this is my opinion, but it's the data backs it up, I should say.
Right.
That, so many entrepreneurs in survey after survey have said that traditional marketing courses changed radically in the last 10 years, or at least they should have. And because marketing has changed, you know, like there's places where you can go to get a bachelor's in marketing and not anymore, but at one time they didn't even mention Facebook, right? When Facebook was the biggest advertiser, you know what I mean? Things like that. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about is social media marketing or influencer marketing even, right? And you start within your circle. It's actually a traditional sales technique too, but you follow through with that and then network further. And that's a great strategy for getting started. If somebody doesn't have any connections like that, they can make them. There's a bunch of great stories of like a person who was a valet and parked people's cars and took business cards and then turned into, I believe it was a financial planner. It was an African-American gentleman. I can't remember his name right now, but he basically became a financial planner. And then he took all these business cards, called everybody and offered to them and say, "Hey, I'm trying to move up in the world. Can I talk to you about financial planning?" And, you know, it was a hard sell, obviously, because he's a valet. So not everybody trusted him, but a few people took a chance. It's a numbers game. You try 100 people and you're going to get 10 that are interested. And then, you know, from those 10, did really good work. Worked hard and got more and got more and got more, and he's you know, retired a multimillionaire. So there's lots of, you know, cases of people like that where you make your network too. You know, if you didn't go to the right Ivy League school or something, you can find it and you can make it.
Or you just show up. You know, you're not going to get more clients by sitting in your office. Mm-hmm. So for me, I went to an event 2 weeks ago with an author, that someone I knew who had a book, and she was doing a small book talk. I went and I left with two people who came up to me and said, "We want to meet you for dinner. I don't know why, but when you walk in the room, you've got a presence about you that makes me say, I want to learn more about you and how we may work together." And I find that if you put yourself out there in the way in which you show up,
mm-hmm.
will attract the kinds of folks you want to work with or be connected to.
Absolutely. So what about things like more traditional marketing, like PR or something? You're trying to get interviews and things like that. What have you done there?
Well, you know, it's been really helpful. I did go to a publicity summit in New York City, and that's really opened the doors for a lot of radio, a lot of podcast interviews, really putting myself out there in those different ways. Mm-hmm. The book that I wrote opened up the door for a TEDx talk.
Nice.
And so I'm finding that that's really opening a lot of doors. It's also opening doors to speaking engagements.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting exposure that way. I'm going to be speaking at a women's conference in Bermuda at the end of November.
Nice.
Not a bad gig to get.
Yeah.
I'll be speaking in
paying your expenses and everything?
Vacation. So
I love it when things are comped. I became very, very overweight for me. I gained about like 30 pounds because I had everything comped in like 2017 and it was too much, you know, and I was like, I had so many buffets comped and everything. I just ate too much. And I was like, I got to start paying my own way so I can diet here. I you know,
yeah, just crazy. Get the lettuce.
Yeah.
The more you're out there, the more you're doing that, the more people know of you, the more it just starts to really snowball. So if I'm an entrepreneur or someone starting out, I say, you know, just start with the snowball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, know what that's going to be. And then, you know, just let it get momentum every
awesome,
year.
Awesome.
So I want to normalize this for entrepreneurs, Dave.
Okay.
It's not unusual to panic annually at a minimum. To say, oh my gosh, what's next, right? That's the entrepreneurial journey. It keeps morphing and changing and evolving. So we have to know that that is normal. Somehow it always works out. I don't always know exactly how it's going to work out, but somehow it always works out.
I would say if you're tenacious and you're trying to find a solution to the problem, you find it. And you know, obviously you have to have a certain level of intelligence and skill set at it. Not everybody's cut out to be an entrepreneur. So that's something,
correct,
you know, to be clear, but you know, all things being equal, if you're tenacious and you're looking for a solution, you're going to find it. But yeah, I would back you up on that. And that's one thing that, I thought I was doing it wrong for like 10 to 15 years. Cause I was constantly getting crises. Little did I know, that's like the startup phase. Of course you're panicking. The weird thing is, like, all my friends that I knew, I didn't know anybody else who was an entrepreneur. They all had regular jobs. They thought I was unstable psychologically. Like, oh, he's up late at night and he sleeps in, or he's like up at 4 a.m. or something. It's like, of course I am. I'm trying to get this thing done so I can get paid on something, you know? You know, his income's up and down and, you know, he's freaking out one moment cause he's got to pay bills and stuff. So I mean, I'm not going to front. I've had weeks, 100-hour work weeks were very common at many, many times. I don't have that now. And I have a whole lot more money and leisure time, and I take my family on vacations and all that. And I could even retire now and never work another day in my life. And I'd make 6 figures a year just on my investments. So that's the trade-off though. You do all that work up front and it terrifies you, but you've got to go through that. There's not an entrepreneur that I know. There's no great story of any successful, you know, biography. Read them all. There's not a single one where they didn't have those panic moments where there's either like a competitor or a deadline or regulations or taxes or anything. There's a lot of things that are out there trying to eat you and destroy you. But if you survive through it, you can have a dream life. And there's no easy way around it, but just to go through it.
You just have to have the passion for what you're doing because, like you said, it's not for everyone.
Well, and like the biggest thing I think that I'm getting from this interview is that it's normal to have those panics. It's normal to have those crises on a regular basis. If you're an entrepreneur and you're not going to bed with, you know, your heart beating, you know, quickly. I heard this from Brian Tracy, actually, the first person who told me this. He's a good friend of mine. I opened for him in Toronto one time, and we've been friends ever since. And he said, if you're not going to bed at least once a week with your heart beating, you know, out of fear, then you're not pushing yourself hard enough. And I said, well, I mean, isn't that like, you know, like not everybody has to push themselves. Not everybody has to be rah, rah, you know, can't we, you know, enjoy the process? And he said, yeah, but if you're not pushing yourself, your competitor is. There's somebody out there pushing themselves, going to bed with a beating heart every night, and they're going to pass you. If you're okay with that, then be okay with that. But I'm not okay with that. And it was just like, wow, you know, that's really what it is. Cause there's competitors, cause there's other people. That's why.
Well, and even as human beings, you know, growth, you know, the quote, growth happens just outside our comfort zone.
Yep.
And that's true no matter what you're doing. And I like to just change the way I think in the morning, which is to wake up and say, look what I get to do today. How cool is this? I get to talk to Dave Farrow. I get to go have a lunch with some women who want to get a big women's event going. You know, I get to have an afternoon meeting with the guy I met at the book talk who just says, I don't know why, but I need to talk to you. He happens to be doing work at Wharton. And I say, how cool is this? Look what I get to do. It's really different than waking up and saying, look what I have to do today.
Yeah.
That's the challenge, you know.
And it's a constant reminder we have to remind ourselves. Everybody falls into that, and it's a attitude of gratitude. You got to have that because you can't get through it yourself without that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right.
I think
well,
it is to normalize it, Dave. I think it is normal, whether it's in our personal lives, our business lives, et cetera. Mm-hmm. To just, you know, the quote on my business card is from Wayne Dyer, change the way you look at things and the things you look at change.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, Brenda, you are definitely a brains behind it. I appreciate you being on the show. Tell us how people can get a hold of you.
They can visit my website at brendakreynolds.com. Don't forget the K, brendakreynolds.com. They'll find the book there. They'll find a link to my TEDx talk if they're interested in learning how to navigate transition fog. And they'll also see a card deck that I've created for people going through an uncertain time that can help them move through it meaningfully and positively.
And you can check out Amazon as well, where you were on there. I really like how you're talking about going through transition fog. I like that. It's like the fog of war. It does lift, and there's blue skies ahead. So thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.